Welcome to this weekend's episode of Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Battleborn Tree Service for Hunters by Hunters for sponsoring the show. Let's jump right into some of the committee stuff that just went down.
Yeah, the commission. Yeah,
just, or commission, not
yeah,
committee.
Yeah,
my
the
bad.
Commission was last week. There was some really good stuff that came up. Two of the big topics, obviously, was the trapping.
Yeah.
The petition to change the regulations for trapping.
For the mountain. And they tried to fly it under the radar, under the guise of protecting the mountain lions.
Correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they had a huge presentation, and then the public got to speak, and a lot of folks from the public and online came in. A lot of data was thrown around, a lot of statistics and stuff. At the end of the day, it was declined because of lack of, like, actual true information.
Well, you threw out statistics.
Yes.
Back up for a second, because there were some cases of using numbers and data that maybe weren't actual numbers and data on the side of the anti-trapping camp.
Yeah, I mean, with statistics, you can manipulate the data as you want to benefit yourself.
Right.
And some of the data that they presented definitely appeared to be that way. You know, they weren't. When you've got traps out there, you have a trap line, it appeared that some of the stuff was they were considering one entire trap line as a trap day, but there may be 20 traps or 30 traps on a line. All actuality, that's 30 trap days.
Right.
You know, per day, it's 30 trap days. So when it came down to it, the likelihood of trapping a mountain lion in a trap came down to 0.00038% chance.
Okay.
With the number of traps that are out there at any given time.
Same odds I have of drawing a California bighorn tag.
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. So, you know, with that, and then the big one was, you know, they wanted traps to be checked every 24 hours, which was
totally not feasible.
That would have kiboshed trapping all by itself, you know, let alone all the other regulation changes that they were proposing. So it got declined. That was pretty much a serious fat chunk of Friday.
Oh, I bet, yeah.
It was a lot. then we went on. So then Saturday came around, and we got into the regulations. One that some folks are really interested in was the junior hunt application.
The points.
Bonus points.
Yes.
So that was approved as written with a modification to how the youth points would transfer to regular application points, because right now it's set up as once your youth points are done, you know, and you're putting in as an adult or in the regular draw, your youth points disappear. Now it sounds like they're going to just make the youth hunt and the regular hunt kind of the same thing.
Yeah, that's how it should be.
Yeah.
And we talked about that.
Yeah. Kind of like age agnostic. So it's not going to matter. That was a really cool one. We're really happy to see that get passed, because those kids, they should be getting points for it.
Yeah.
Simple as that. And then they went through, you had all of the other sections of all the draws, the future for the dream tag, heritage tag, all of that stuff. They kind of cruised right through that. It was all approved as written, you know, turkey hunt regs, all that. They did make a suggestion on the big game seasons.
Oh, they did. Okay.
Yeah. It was just that a minor change or to the language, to where they want to modify the language in relation to closed hunting seasons.
Okay. How so?
So, well, that's what I wasn't clear on yet. So where they wanted to make it more transparent, to where we don't have people violating it and kind of thinking that my hunt ends at the beginning of the next hunt, not realizing
right.
that there's a 2-week dead period in there.
Gotcha.
You know, where there's no hunt. So just making that clear to people that have those tags, where the end of your hunt or prior to your hunt, you have a dead period.
It was more a modification of the language, not necessarily a modification of the season dates.
Correct. Yeah, right. It's just the language. Just making it clear, and then trying to get it known out to the folks that have those particular tags. Like, yeah, your season doesn't end.
Well, muzzleloader's not open yet, so I'm still out here. That type of thing.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, muzzleloader doesn't open until the 15th, so I have until the 14th to hunt. you know, and that's how some people think.
Okay.
And not realizing that, no, there's a 2-week no hunting period.
When you first said modifications to season dates or whatever,
yeah,
I was hoping you were going to say they're bringing back the bugle hunt.
They're bringing back bugle for only bow hunters.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No. Okay. So no date awesome. Changes, just a verbiage change.
Yeah. Just making things a little clearer. And then the other big one that came up was the coyote or the, they called it the calling contests.
Yeah. You said they're still grinding on that. Yeah.
Yeah. So the commission made a recommendation to require, if you're part of a competition, one of these coyote competitions, that you will have to have a hunting license, and then there will have to be a season. For,
to have the contest or for the species?
For this, there will be a season for these hunts. Kind of
okay.
like a deer season or whatever it might be. It could be something probably similar like chukar or something where
But if I'm not in a contest and I'm cruising along,
right.
like I whack a coyote in June, was that left untouched? Or
no, that was actually discussed. So
okay.
these requirements or regulation changes, potential regulations changes, would only pertain to the coyote shooting contests.
Gotcha.
So if you're part of the contest, you will have to have a Nevada hunting license, and the event will have to happen during or in between the season regulation that they've provided, whatever that might end up being.
So I'm assuming they're not going to do it like now in February where they're dumber in a box of rocks because the females are going in heat.
Yeah,
they'll probably do it outside of that or something.
Yeah, exactly, or the pupping season, so
right.
you're not leaving them. Going back to your point, if you are not part of it and you're just going out recreationally with your, you know, your kids,
I'm scouting
or your buddy
for
or,
mule deer,
right,
and I see a
like
coyote.
That. You know,
yeah.
like when we were chukar hunting last week, we had that right. coyote cruising along.
Yeah.
Then from what is proposed,
okay.
it can't change because it still has to go through a few steps, is that if you're just doing that, you're out and about, then you don't need the hunting license. You don't need, there's no season. It's just
same
it's
as
same
it ever
old,
was.
Same.
Okay.
This is only pertaining to people who are participating in the coyote shooting contests.
Gotcha.
So
okay.
the kicker with that is, since it is an unprotected species, going to have to probably go to the legislature and get the species as a game species now.
Yeah, so that trickle-down
so
effect, it
exactly,
may.
Exactly, yeah, because, I mean, if you state something as it's unprotected, like a black-tailed jackrabbit, unprotected, no big deal, it's hard to say, well, you still have to have a hunting license. There's got to be some language
yeah.
in there to regulate that and to elevate the coyote to more of a...
Right, I don't know anybody that hunts coyotes that doesn't have a hunting license anyway. I'm sure there
yeah.
are examples of people that committed a game violation, but they still go out to hunt coyotes because they're
yeah,
unprotected.
And then
maybe
people coming
that.
In from other states.
Oh, in other
these,
states.
Yeah, some
yeah.
of these contests, they draw quite a few folks from Idaho and Utah and Oregon.
Gotcha.
They come in as like teams. It's some of them are team events.
And there's money involved.
Oh, there's,
and, right,
there's a lot
right.
of money involved in some of these. Yeah, so they're coming over. And they are not. They don't have a. They're going to get scratched a little bit because the hunting license for a non-resident, I don't know what it is, $170
one,
or something.
Yeah, one something.
One something. So
okay.
Anyway, so that's what's going on with the contests. Everything else was pretty much smooth sailing. Went really well. That
yeah.
is our update for the Wildlife Commission.
Coming up on the show, we're going to talk a little bit about turkeys. We'll cover sheep. And then we'll get into chukar as well.
Yeah, the end of the season is right now. You,
yep.
Today's
well,
the last
sundown
day.
Today.
Yeah, sundown today. So, yeah.
So hey, don't right. go anywhere. That's all coming up on Nevada Backcountry. Keep that radio tuned to 99.1 or 92.3 FM Talk. You are listening to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. If you miss a segment of the show or miss an entire weekend because you were out chasing birds, you can go to 991fmtalk.com, click on the podcast tab. The shows are all available and archived there. Or if you're an Apple user, Apple Podcasts, just search for Nevada Backcountry. Thank you to Legacy Sports International, home of the Howa Superlight, for sponsoring this show. Let's go chukar right off the bat, Dave. And you and I have been getting out I've kind of gotten to that age where it's like, okay, January is my chucker month, the end of big game season, towards Christmas time there, that ends. And then I kind of switch gears and go into chasing birds. And we wanted to cover a little bit of it on the show because we had a unique experience. Last weekend?
Yeah, last weekend.
We went out. It was you, my dad, my brother. And so we go out. And
can't forget our two dogs.
And the two dogs, yeah. Gage and Dixie. It's one of those years where there are just birds everywhere, but it's still chucker hunting.
Exactly. We'll get into that.
And if somebody had run into my brother and I coming off the mountain, we would have told them, yeah, it's crazy. Birds are holding tight. They're getting up at your feet, on and on. But if somebody had run into my dad and you,
because yeah, we totally each had different gone, story.
Yeah, you guys were saying they were getting up at 70, 80 yards.
Yeah, they were jumping really early. I mean, Gage was doing a great job. He'd get all birdie, tail up. You know, I knew he wasn't on hard birds because his head was still up.
Right,
but
right.
He was just creeping along, and your dad and I would kind of get behind him a bit. And then all of a sudden, these birds are jumping at 60, 70 yards, and you're just like, I didn't do anything. Holy crow, what's going on? And it just group after group all the way up that mountain. And it was like, this
bizarre.
Is crazy. Because, you know, we went to a pretty close to that area
the weekend before. Yeah.
And I had several birds that I almost had to kick out of the bush.
Right.
I mean, Gage was pointing into the bush so hard, and I'm standing right next to him. I'm like, Gage, dude, I don't see the bird. Yeah. Keep moving. And he's like, I can't move.
There's nothing there, dog.
He's like right there in front of you, Dad. Yeah. And I take a step, and it flushes out at a foot in front of me. And I'm like,
yep.
Well, heck. It was a very interesting, 2 weeks or so where,
yeah.
And you and your brother did great. You guys were banging away.
What's funny is you guys had those birds that were getting up way, way out there. We were coming down the other side, so maybe a couple hundred yards apart or something.
Yeah, that's it, yeah.
On that ridge line, and we had nothing but birds holding super tight.
Yeah.
And I don't know what the difference between what in that 200 yards made the difference, but I had birds flushing at my feet. I had birds flushing like behind me. Dixie, my dog, would be locked up on point. I'd be a good 10, 15 feet past her thinking, oh, what in the hell is she on about? There's nothing here.
And then
off my left shoulder or something, here comes the covey. So it just weird to me. And I had the conversation with a buddy of mine and we're talking about it. Everybody keeps, there's birds behind every bush, birds behind every rock. Well, yeah, they may be there. There's a lot of birds for sure.
Yeah.
But it's not gimme 15, 20 yard birds in some cases. It's still chucker hunting.
No, and people are saying, saying that same thing. There's tons of birds out there. You're not getting out of your truck and shooting them off the road. I mean, maybe somebody might get lucky and do it. Yeah. But in general, the first weekend, we walked 7.8 miles.
Yeah, something like that, about 8 miles.
And then
yeah.
Last weekend, I know on my tracker, it was 6.7 miles.
Yeah. So my brother and I did like 8 and change.
Yeah, because you guys went up that other canyon. So you're still putting a lot of burning.
It's work.
Yeah, it's work. You are getting into plenty of birds. I mean, we saw and experienced a lot of birds, a lot of chatter going on. But yeah, our coveys were pretty good size, and they were just jumping early.
Like my buddy said when I was talking to him about it, that thing you kind of compare notes. Oh, what have you been seeing? Where have you been going? That sort of thing. He made a very good point, and he said, well, yeah, there's a lot of birds. That's a lot of eyeballs.
Yeah.
So that could be part of it, too. When they're in those 40, 50 bird coveys, hey, that's a lot of eyeballs.
All it takes is one.
Yeah. If that sentry bird picks you up or picks the dog up.
Or just jumps. They all go. And I think that's kind of what was going on with us, because you'd see one bird kind of lift off and we had a pretty good breeze up top, so it'd catch that breeze, and it turned into an F-22 jet.
Yeah.
I mean, it was, like, gone.
Yeah.
And then next thing you knew, the other 15 or 20 birds would be up, and you're like, oh.
There's okay. That. Yeah.
And it's not like you can go after them, because that canyon.
No.
It was a nasty, steep canyon, and you're on one point of it, and they're flying all the way to the other canyon. You're like, well.
The spot we went to the last 2 weekends. It's rim rock. It's gnarly. Man. Chews dogs up pretty quick.
Yeah, that's why we're not out this weekend. I can't. My dog's split a par pretty dang good.
So did Dixie, yeah.
Yeah, just sliced one wide open.
And part of that is that, you know, years ago when I was diehard about the thing, I would go through the whole summer conditioning with my dogs. And in the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years or whatever, I've gotten out of that because I'm like, well, I got this tag, I got that tag, I'm going on that hunt. I got 4 kids. I'm not out running her, toughening up her paws.
Yeah.
So, yeah, when you're a January guy like I am and you are, yeah, your dogs get chewed up pretty dang quick.
Yeah.
That and the weather this weekend kind of sucked, but.
Yeah, it was hot. I mean, we're cruising around out there in t-shirts.
Yeah.
It was pretty
dang. Think about that, high 50s, and then this weekend it's rain and clouds and miserable conditions.
Yeah, I got out earlier in the season, and I do have to say that this later portion of the season, usually you start seeing less birds or they're really skittish towards the end. I don't think they really changed their pattern because earlier in the season, a couple times I went out, they were holding tight, good shooting, got a lot of birds. And then I'd hit other areas where they were getting up early and just doing their thing. And then when we all went out in for the month of January, man, it was just a mixed bag. It just depended.
What day, what day spot?
What canyon you went up?
And don't, look, if you listen to the show regularly and you're a chucker nut, you can probably turn off the, no, I'm kidding. Don't turn off your radio, but
Give us some advice.
A lot of people, they stick to a choke, a load the whole season.
Oh, yeah.
They just run that out. So one of the things I experienced is because it's been so up and down with, you know, birds holding tight, birds flushing far out, I made the mistake of, we hit one spot back, gosh, around New Year's or whatever, and they were getting up way out there.
Yeah.
And I thought, oh, okay, well, I'm going to put a much tighter choke in.
A modified.
Yeah, I'll throw that in there, and, I'll be able to pick up those birds at 40 yards in some cases. Well, sure enough, then we go out the next weekend, and I got birds getting up at 10 yards in front of me or 15, you know, and it's like, okay, idiot, how long have I been doing this? I know better. I need to get back to that. I just run an IC choke.
That's it. That's all I got.
Do not change your setup based on one experience at one spot on one weekend.
I just stay with ice and my 12, but I do want to start shooting my 20 because I know you, your dad, your brother,
we're
you
20
guys are
guys.
All shooting 20s.
Yeah.
And, I just.
You know what? Somebody sold me on this years ago. What load are you shooting out of your 12 gauge?
Sixes.
Sixes. How many ounces? What?
1 ounce.
1 ounce. Okay. I'm shooting a 20 with 1 ounce of sixes. An ounce of sixes is an ounce of sixes.
That's true.
And I got a whole lot less gun to carry than carrying my 12 gauge. So somebody years ago pointed that out because it was the same thing. I was carrying a 12. They were a diehard 20 person. And the argument could be made, well, it's coming out of a tighter barrel. Maybe your pattern's not quite as wide or something.
Yeah.
But still, they made the point to me, hey, an ounce of sixes is an ounce of sixes.
Yeah,
it doesn't matter what it's coming out of. And I went, oh, that's a very good point. Okay, to heck with this. I'm going to start just carrying a 20 gauge, and I'm going to shoot an ounce of sixes, just like I did with my 12.
Yeah. Well, and it also comes down to practice. I mean, I wish we still had Sage Hill for the leaks and stuff.
Yeah, we talked about this.
I know, we talked about that the whole drive there and back. Like, there's just no place for us in this area to get some good practice in, have leagues and stuff. You know, when I shot leagues back in those days, I was shooting really well.
Right.
And I know I can tell I've had a decline because the gun only comes out, a couple weeks before bird season. And
you usually adjust on the fly on the hill.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, when I was in the league, we had a guy there, older gentleman, probably in his early 60s or so, which is kind of weird because I'm almost
now
at
you're,
that.
Yeah.
But he only shot a 28 gauge.
Oh,
and this
man.
Guy was lightning. I mean, we do a...
I've always said, if somebody shows up and they got a 28 gauge, that dude is getting his birds.
He had a 28 over and under.
Yep.
And his group, 5 older guys.
Right,
and,
right.
And, for the trap, I mean, he would do 48, 49, 50 out of 50. And you're just like, my Lord. When you practice that much, it's just... You figure it out.
And
that's
we could.
A big thing.
Yeah, I mean, we could make the drive. And hey, shout out to Tommy Forbes at Capital
Carson,
City there.
Heck yeah, it's a great facility.
He took care of my dad on a new shotgun recently, but it's a great facility. But again, it's 25 minute, we got to load up everything, drive down, versus just bumping across the valley for me or up the valley for you.
Exactly.
And you're at Sage Hill.
Yeah. I used to ride my UTV to Sage Hill. Just, drive right down the road. So practice is a big component.
Hey, maybe next year, it all depends on what tags I draw, but maybe I'll put a little more effort into it now that my brother's back in town and he wants to get after it.
Yeah. That'd be cool. Maybe the three of us or the four of us could just carpool down to Carson and get into some of those leagues.
I'm for it.
Yeah.
Nothing else to do in the dog days of summer.
So in the end, I mean, what did you think about your chucker season?
Great.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Was it all like people have been chatterboxing about, like all the birds? Oh my God, it's so great.
Yeah, I've seen in years past, if I go back to like 2018-ish or so, the year we had the real heavy winter, what was that, 16-17?
Yeah.
So, I mean, that season was bang up. That was phenomenal.
That was nuts.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, tons of birds out there. It's definitely worth getting out
and
for.
And older birds. I don't think I shot a single young bird this entire year. They were all big, fat.
I had one the first weekend we went out, and I think it was just my dad, my brother, and I. I don't think you were there with us.
No.
Yeah, we ran out, and I did shoot one young bird that, but otherwise, it's been like chicken-sized birds.
Yeah, they're big, so it was a good season. I would chalk it up as successful. Thanks for all that awesome management going on out there and all the seeding projects.
Amen.
Yep, all the seeding projects and everything that helps those habitat stay healthy. So
don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Welcome back to Nevada Backcountry on 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Thank you to Jim Irwin, Performance Shooting Institute down there in Gardnerville. He's got all the dates for the courses coming up posted on the website. Go check him out at performanceshootinginstitute.com. Dave and I are going to try to make some of the long range stuff and tune up on that this summer, so you might see us out there. Over the break there, Dave, we stayed on the theme of birds, but we're chatting about... Oh gosh, what was it like last year at some point? A couple guys illegally deposited, or what do I want to say?
Yeah, they just illegally released
a bunch of turkeys
down south.
Yeah. Right. And at the time when we covered it on the show, I thought that they had pictures of license plates and pictures of the truck and all that.
Yeah, because it was like a white Chevy.
Exactly.
And they had pictures of it going in and coming out of that particular area where they released the turkeys, the whole thing. And
I never heard anything past that.
No, I have not either. I need to look into that and see if that was ever... I figure if they had a really good description of the vehicle and... Obviously, a license plate, I mean, that's kind of a...
You think it'd be an automatic.
You know, and I know one of the images kind of showed partial of one of the people in the
truck. Like a side profile of the face.
That you could match. So we'll have to look into that. But yeah, they released, I forgot what it was, like 8 or 10 or something like that.
Oh, I thought it was more than that.
May have been more than that. But
hey, if anybody listening out there knows any updates on that story, by all means, text us.
Yeah.
775-884-9910 or get in touch through social media. Let us know what you guys out there have heard about that. The lighter side of turkey stuff.
Yeah.
They've been moving a bunch of birds around the state right now.
Yeah, they have. There was a capture and release a week or two ago.
Okay.
They're moving some birds around the state, bolstering up some populations and trying to reestablish populations in other areas. So trying to spread the wealth a little bit. There's some really good habitat that's been restored and rehabbed that now has the potential to have a decent carrying capacity of some turkeys. So...
I'd love to see turkey do well here. And I always use the example in Maine. I think it was back in the 90s. They started a pretty aggressive reintroduction program of wild turkeys in the state of Maine. Turkeys had gotten to the point in the state of Maine where if you had 20 acres or more, they were like coyotes. You didn't need a hunting license.
Oh, really?
You
they were just a control mechanism.
They're everywhere. Oh, yeah. If you own 20 acres or more in the state of Maine, you can just whack turkeys. I'd love to see something like that out here. Now, again, people are going to say, well, that's Maine. This, I get it. It's a high desert environment out here.
Yeah,
it's
a little arid. Kind of different. I mean, we have pockets of really good habitat for turkeys, but Maine, pretty much the whole state. But So, yeah. So when they say turkeys are going crazy in Maine, so that means all.
I forget what it was. Yeah, it was a huge, huge between the reintroduction program of the 90s. And then, like I said, we'll call it like 2010-ish, 2012-ish, on like gangbusters.
If you have certain things line up, you know, you've got really good cover, you've got some really good wet years and some good vegetation growth, you got low predation.
Right.
You know, you provide all of these like almost perfect storm scenarios. And when they're having their chicks, you know, the rate of loss is very low. Dude.
A population will explode.
It'll explode.
And that's the thing, people listening here, Nevadans, you know, we don't really have a lot of good roost habitat.
No.
And that's the one thing turkeys are really dependent on to get away from predators. You know, when you're driving out there, some of the Midas and places like that, man, there ain't a tree for 100 miles. I could see that definitely being or having an effect.
And Joshua trees don't count.
No. they're not going to roost, you know, in sage or bitterbrush. They need an actual tree to roost
in. They're not roosting in pinyon juniper either.
No.
I mean, so it's usually, you know, cottonwood corridors, things like that is their zone.
There are a bunch out, or I say a bunch, I don't know what number we're talking about, but like the Mason Valley. Yeah. There are a bunch out there.
There's quite a few out there. That whole valley, basically. You have the wildlife management area has got a pretty darn good population of turkeys. And then you have the adjacent agricultural ranches, the ag fields and the cattle ranches and stuff that are kind of surrounding the wildlife management area, and a lot of turkeys move on to those.
Okay.
And they do have landowner tags that you can, you have to have
turkeys?
Yeah, you have to have a conversation with the landowner, and if they let you, then you can. Sometimes those turkeys stay in those areas because they're fantastic. And another situation where, you know, if they're not being pressured or anything like that, it's almost like a natal colony of turkeys. They just kind of breed over there, and then they kind of disperse, so...
Okay.
But yeah, that's a good spot. The Carson River there down near Fort Churchill.
Yep.
There's some good turkeys.
Lovelock.
Lovelock. There's some good ones down south.
North of Battle Mountain.
Well, yeah, you've got the area. New Argenta management area that the Department of Wildlife acquired not too long ago.
I thought you couldn't hunt that
not
yet.
Yeah, not yet.
Okay.
Not yet.
But there's see, there's bunches of turkeys out there.
Of turkeys. Luckily, I was driving out one day out to Elko, and I stopped over there and took a break and hiked around. They have a nice little trail, a road, and loops you around part of the new management area. And I came across turkeys. I had a bunch of deer cruising through because there's a couple agricultural fields that are adjacent to some buildings there from the old ranch houses, and it was cool.
They're all over.
Yeah, it's a really, really neat area, like a little oasis when you're driving past Battle Mountain.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm going to put you on the spot. Do you have a rough estimate of like turkey population in the state of Nevada?
Actually, I was just...
Are we talking hundreds or thousands as Dave starts scrolling?
I was going to look that up, but you know, me and my age, I got to find my glasses first.
Get the readers on.
No, I think it's in the hundreds. It's not
hundreds,
in the thousands.
Okay.
Yeah.
Any talk or any chatter about increasing the number of tags for turkeys?
Not that has been discussed in any of the CAB.
Okay.
I think we're both wrong here. So the latest that I can see here is Nevada turkey population is estimated to be between 1,600 and 2,400 birds.
So it'd be thousands, yeah.
So, a fair amount. They were first introduced in 1960.
So it's been going on since the 60s?
Yeah, they were first introduced in the 60s.
So I'm going to say the state of Maine then.
No, not quite.
It's not going to explode like that, yeah.
No, so that's what's going on with turkeys. They're moving them around.
Okay.
As well as, you know, if we're going to slide right in from birds to mammals.
Let's go sheep.
Sheep, yeah.
Well, I'll tell you what. Let's save that for the upcoming segment. We'll finish the show on that.
Yeah.
Because I think I'm looking at the clock here, and it looks like we're up against a break. So don't go anywhere. Stay tuned to 99.1 and 92.3 FM Talk. Final segment of Nevada Backcountry. Thank you all for listening this weekend. Hopefully some of you are out there grinding still, getting your last minute chucker, unlike Dave and I that are sitting in a climate controlled studio. I also want to thank Truck Envy here in Reno. Make sure you go see the guys at Truck Envy on South Virginia. Now, as we alluded to in the last segment there, Dave, we're going to get into sheep, and I want to preface the it's good news, but I also want to say what came up in this last commission meeting, and I know we're trying to get Lydia with NBU on. There's a lot of moving parts that I don't think the department or NBU wants to address quite yet, but I do want to bring up, man, they are having some struggles down south with the sheep population.
Yeah, they are. You know, this prolonged drought that we've had. You know, we were doing water hauls last year. The Department of Wildlife was doing water hauls to certain guzzlers because there was absolutely no water.
Right.
And in a lot of these areas, if there weren't guzzlers, there wouldn't be sheep.
Right, right, right.
So
okay.
It's kind of a responsibility. If we're going to put it there, we need to maintain it.
Gotcha.
We need to keep water in it. So with the prolonged drought, it's not just the water, but their food source. It's
yeah,
not
nothing's
coming up.
Grow.
It's not growing. So, yeah, there's a critical issue going on down there where there's a possibility of losing a lot of sheep if things don't come around and translocate them somewhere. Probably going to lose sheep no matter what because you can't fix the problem 100% with the massive issue, how big the issue is. And hauling water, it's not an inexpensive thing to do.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
you're talking,
especially in some of these sheep ranges. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, the type of machinery that you need, the helicopters, stuff like that, those are some of those things can be thousands of dollars an hour. Then the water haul, then there's just so many variables that have to come into play. You're talking, it could get well into the high six figures.
Ooh.
to move water.
So is there any cross-pollination between, let's say, like somebody like Muley Fanatics, NBU, Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation? Is anybody kind of coming together?
All of those are coming together trying to figure out the issue. Because you're right, it's not just the sheep in some of these areas.
Other species hit them, yeah.
You've got antelope, you've got mule deer, you know, so there are other concerns, and including all the small mammals and all the other things that require, you know, a good water source.
Is there an antelope organization?
You know, no, I don't think so.
You said antelope, yeah, and I immediately went, what's the antelope conservation organization?
Yeah, I think antelope just anecdotally get assistance based on
mooches.
Yeah, it just kind of works around the corner. But
yeah, that's funny. I've never thought about that until right now.
Now you got me thinking. I'm going to be thinking about it all night. Like, man, I'm going to have to research it. I'm going to have to look it up, see if there's one around the nation. You're killing me, dude.
Yeah, sorry, Dave.
It's all right. My brain's going to roll now. But during the meeting this last week, one of our specialists brought up there's this really cool system now because one of the big expenses is sending people out to check these guzzlers.
Yeah.
You know, as you know, being out in the country like you and I are, some of these guzzlers aren't exactly easy to get to.
No.
You know, you're parking and you're hiking for 2 or 3 miles. And so you need to send folks out there to determine if that guzzler needs water.
Right.
You know, how low or
you can't do that from a helicopter.
Because you can't see inside the holding tanks.
Right.
You know, and some of them have 2 tanks, some of them have 4, you know, it depends on what year they were put out there. But there's this new system. It was really cool that it's kind of like a gas gauge on your car. And it runs solar and then it sends a signal up and you subscribe to like a satellite plan and it'll send you the information and it'll tell you how much water still in the tanks.
Like my propane tank at my house.
Right.
Cynthia gets a text, or not a text, but it's like a message in an app. to let her know what, so similar to that.
Yeah, and it was really cool. So they were showing like a on a unit, probably not Nevada, somewhere else, but yeah, it's just a little solar face on it, so it stays running, and then it just has a gauge just like your gas tank would, and you can get online and you'll check it, and they're like, okay, there's still 800 gallons in this one, so we're okay. Well,
gotcha. That, we can go somewhere else.
Right, now you can prioritize which ones you need to really get to.
Streamline the process, keep costs down. You know, very cool.
And we got a lot of guzzlers in the state of Nevada.
Yeah, so there's a few.
It would take a while to put those units on and an enormous cost. But back to the sheep, though.
Oh, yeah, silver lining of all this. We started meandering. But the silver lining, I suppose, to this whole drought issue is the relocation stuff going on right now with sheep.
There have been a few captures that have gone on, and those have been relocated. It's actually, some department has received some sheep for not just, you know, because of the drought situation, but we're also, you know, one of the components is you need to have genetic diversity in these populations.
Right.
So, you know, some of these are very isolated groups. You don't want any type of genetic bottlenecking because that's just not a good plan. So acquired some from Oregon, acquired some from Idaho, and those have been dispersed into certain pockets of sheep habitat and other groups. So that's been going on. And then there's all the conversation of what and how to go about the issue that's going on down south, like where to move them, what's to do. You just can't grab them and say, oh, I don't know, just put them over there.
Right.
You know, you need to make sure that the area where you're putting them is going to be able to handle X amount of more sheep. Does it have the water? Does it have the forage?
You sent me a text. So 40 went to the Calicos.
Yes.
Or are going to the Calicos.
Have
gone to the Calicos.
Yeah, and then 40 to the Montanas.
I'm sure they've got other stuff planned.
Yeah, 40 Californias and 40 deserts.
Californias and the Calicos, correct?
Correct. You know, so it's already going on, and it's just a matter of not even trying to stay ahead of it, because I don't know if being ahead of it is even possible right now. It's just trying to do the best possible management that can be done with what we have available and the time frame in which we have.
I don't want to gripe. What I have seen over the years in the state of Nevada is we have a very, and I think I know the explanation for it, but we have a very reactive sheep management style in the state. I know there's a lot of proactive work that goes into it as well.
Yeah, there's a ton.
But I feel like I always hear about these reactive measures. I would also point out, like, weather, in this case with drought, I mean, you can't take the farmer's almanac as gospel truth.
No.
So you have to be reactive and flexible in that situation, because it is such a fluid situation, no pun intended,
right,
year to year, where it's like, oh, hey, we thought we were going to get this type of winter, but this is the actual winter we got.
Yeah, and that's not how it's addressed, actually. I mean,
oh, it's not? Okay.
No, they don't wait for something to happen. It's discussions have been going on for some time in relation to these pockets. Like when the pneumonia was going on in some of these areas, the vets and stuff knew things were getting to a point that needed to start being proactive on how we are going to address some of these issues. And, you know, like I said earlier, you're not going to fix everything 100%. It's just not going to happen. For one, don't have the resources, don't have the funding, don't have the people power. You just can't do it. You manage it the best you possibly can with the resources that you have available and the people power that you have available. You just tackle it the best you can. You're going to lose some sheep. You're going to lose some deer. You're going to lose some animals. That's just a part of an environmental process, you know? So some of these plans take quite some time to address. You know, they've been doing stuff down there last year, the year before last. There's been monitoring. There's been sheep movement going on. Nobody can gauge how bad a drought could be.
Right.
You just have no idea.
Until after the fact.
Or until you're right in the middle of it and you're like, holy moly, this progressed a lot faster than anticipated. Or you can have a situation like, what was it, 2 years ago? You had that Pacific hurricane hit.
Oh, yeah, that monster
southern
winter.
Yeah, that entire southern part of the state and Tonopah area had flash flooding for like 4 days.
When you had your sheet tag.
When I had my sheet tag. You know, you don't know a lot of that stuff. So those are components that you can't really stick that in the data. You can't make that a point in the data until it's like right on top of you. So
take everything I said, throw it out the window. I was totally wrong.
No, you have a valid point because there's some situations where a lot of folks think like, well, no one's doing anything because they're not seeing positive outcome or the outcome that they want, you know, anticipating because they don't have all the information. They don't understand the variables that can't be crossed. You don't have the time or anything to do it. And it's just... Sometimes it's just the old tough.
Good news travels fast, bad news travels farther.
Yes.
It's that thing, you know, when there's a sheep issue, it spreads like wildfire.
Right.
When there's like a sheep win or, you know, a positive
it's a little
sheep
bleep.
Thing, yeah. People are like, oh, this is good. Okay, moving on.
Well, that's what they're supposed to do.
Yeah.
You know, and there's no, it's, yeah. So kind of like with the deer herds and the numbers and all this, you know, it's like, well, there's a lot of factors there, tons of them. So, but, you know, in all, they're not... It's not a horrible situation. There's, you know, a lot of the areas are doing pretty good. That pneumonia deal that we went through a couple years ago, you know, you're always going to have to deal with disease with, you know, sheep and goats kind of intermingling at times with the herds and now with the herd to herd transmission.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It's going to be something, especially with sheep, that is just going to be nonstop. I want to say thank you to all of the nonprofits, all the organizations out there, all the sportsmen and women that have really come together to help out and put boots on the ground to help the department and, you know, help solve some of these issues or at least try to control some of these issues. You guys are the only ones that actually put your words to action, where a lot of the folks that are against hunting and everything else, they just talk. They don't actually do anything. And that's just words from David.
I'll piggyback on that. And I'll use the, you know, the old quote, your actions speak so loudly that I cannot hear what you say.
Yeah.
So yes. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Yeah. Without them, this would be so many of these projects and programs would never get off the ground ever.
And I have yet to see a PETA member out there with a shovel in hand,
putting in a guzzler. Yeah, putting in a guzzler. Exactly.
Yep. Let's get out of here. Another show in the books. Do not go anywhere. Stay tuned because Tom Gresham is coming up next with Gun Talk.